My name is Dawson S., and welcome to Dawson's Corner. The purpose of this show is to look at the world and the people in it through varying social sciences, and for today, I would like to start with the study of philosophy. The philosophical idea I would like to tease is found as far back as the Mandean religion, around the beginning of the Common Era. Now, in Mandean beliefs, they list a sort of dualism in both the world and people. The soul of a being, in their system, was connected to the light, or the good, while the body connected to the dark evil. Another thought from the Mandeans was the idea that chaos was the evil of a thousand mysteries, or at least that's what they listed in their holy book, the Ginza Rabbah. This set down an idea that chaos can be thought of as an evil trait. And at first glance, this does seem like a true sentiment. Those who cannot keep order with themselves and with the world must be contributing to evil, right? Well, actually, there's a very strong argument showing no connection at all between chaos and evil. This argument is famously made in the story of Robin Hood, where the protagonist and namesake of the story wholly contributes to the chaos of breaking the law by stealing so that he can do good by giving what he steals to those who need it. This argument also shows up in a rather unlikely place, because in the basements of concerned parents everywhere, there are people playing Dungeons and Dragons. Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D, as it is affectionately called by its players, is a tabletop role-playing game where a group of players creates their own characters to adventure through a world of fantasy that is controlled by another player, the Dungeon Master. There has been a lot of growth in the 40 plus years that the game has been around. The company that officially runs the game, Wizards of the Coast, releases updates to D&D, officially plans adventures for it, and adds in other additions to make sure that the game never loses its flavor. Now, I just want to let you know that I'm not an expert on Dungeons & Dragons by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it's been about 2 years since I first experienced the game for myself. And when I did, I immediately could feel the pull of this game and why it appeals to so many people. For me, the biggest attraction that this game has comes from the in-depth character creation process that it has to offer. When starting a D&D game, your first step is typically to create your character. This player-generated character is completely customizable, as long as your Dungeon Master allows it. Players are allowed to choose from many fighting classes that dictate a lot regarding your overall style as a character. You can master combat skills as a fighter or a monk, choose to work with magic as a wizard or warlock, and even be a charismatic bard or a scheming rogue. After choosing your class, players are able to choose a race for their character. They can also give the details of their character's appearance. Characters can be anything from a standard human to an intelligent elf to something even more off the wall, like a giant, bugbear, or, as one of my friends was allowed by RDM, a tree. An anthropomorphic tree. With this variety of physical descriptors, it shouldn't be hard to see why Dungeons & Dragons' character creation process is so in-depth. But it goes even a step further, and starts working with the non-physical descriptors of a character. That being their motivations, their backgrounds, and their alignment as a character. Alignments in Dungeons & Dragons is a way to look at how a character would ethically or morally view decisions, and which decisions they would tend to lean towards. In the first edition of D&D, players were allowed to choose three alignments when creating their character. There was the lawful alignment, which implied an honor and respect for society's rules. There was a chaotic alignment, which implied rebelliousness and more individualistic characteristics. And then there was a neutral, which would seek the balance between those two other alignments. Now, as the version went on, they began to bring in another set of alignments to cross with these three, which would create sort of a lattice of nine different alignments. So we would have one axis that goes from lawful to neutral to chaotic, and another axis ranging from good to neutral to evil. And then in the fifth edition, they even went off of this nine alignment schema and included a tenth option called unaligned, which is for creatures that operate more on instinct than they do on their moral decision making. So looking back on the philosophical debate between the connections of chaos and evil, Dungeons & Dragons' alignment chart imposes that there is a separation between chaos and evil. Why, they only meet up once out of the nine different alignments that a character can choose. And let me be real with you, a chaotic alignment doesn't seem that damning at all. The third edition of Dungeons & Dragons defines chaos as something that implies freedom, adaptability, and flexibility. On the downside, of course, chaos can include recklessness, resentment towards legitimate authority, arbitrary actions, and irresponsibility. Those who promote chaotic behavior say that only unfettered personal freedom allows people to express themselves fully and let society benefit from the potential that its individuals have within them. Now, in the third edition, they define evil as something that implies harming, oppressing, and killing others. Some creatures simply have no compassion for others and kill without qualms if doing so is convenient or if it can be set up. Others actively pursue evil, killing for sport or out of duty to make some malevolent deity or master. And this comes into another debate within the D&D realm, which is the idea of what the fans call murder hobos. Murder hobo is another name for the stereotypical protagonist of a D&D adventure. Or the party of a D&D adventure, where they typically are tasked to just go out into the world that their dungeon master has created for them, and kill people and take their stuff. This has created sort of a backlash in the D&D community recently, where people aren't super happy with how their characters are aligned if all they're expected to do is go out, get into combat with people, and then, you know, kill them and take their stuff. How can one effectively be the hero of a D&D story if all you're doing is going around and killing people that the dungeon master throw in your wake? Now, as I mentioned before, I'm not an expert on Dungeons & Dragons, but I have a few friends who are. One of my good friends, Mitchell Gertkin, has agreed to come on the show and answer a few of my questions for him regarding this connection between chaos and evil in Dungeons & Dragons, and maybe even give us a little bit of how he handles the murder hobo problem. Now, Mitchell, you've been in D&D for quite a while, so can you tell us how you got into D&D? What was your first experience like?
Yeah, sure. The first time I'd been exposed to it was actually through a recorded campaign. Okay. The people who make Dungeons & Dragons Wizards of the Coast, mm-hmm. or at least who work with it now, they had sponsored a recorded game called Dice Camera Action. Which I think was in 2015, being 4 years ago now. And that was the first time I'd really gotten into anything that D&D was involved in. Okay. And then when I got to college, there had been the local Nerd Night, which had brought together a lot of different board games, a lot of tabletop games. I had played for a little while in a campaign there, and fast forward a little while, and now I've been in, I think, 7 campaigns now, and I'm running one right now, and 2 if we can finally get ours back on.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm in it for the long haul, I guess.
Oh, good. Yeah. And what sorts of things about D&D draw you into it? Is it the realism? Is it the non-realism?
I don't know. It's a lot of people would say, oh, it's the escapism or whatever. I don't think that it's really an escape kind of thing. I think it's more finding a way, like, you know, because I'm also getting into more acting and more theatrical things, it's a way, at least for me, to try and not only be a little bit better at expression that might be outside of my own comfort zone, but to understand what parts of me I put into a character, or what parts of other people, like, if I'm running the game, that they've put into themselves. Like,
okay.
It's a kind of, it's a new layer on identity that I don't get to see as often outside of the game.
Yeah, and so, yeah, building off of that creating character aspect, you know, there's a lot of different ideas about how to create a character, and you said you draw a lot of, or at least put a lot of personal stuff into your characters. So, what does that look like? What are your thoughts on the idea of being able to create a character for a game?
Well, it has the problem of being, well, like you said, it is a character for a game, so you have to find some way to gamify it. Like, like the characters themselves, they rely a lot on statistics, which usually you get like 3 or 4 separate 6-sided dice, roll them together, and add them up to decide how strong your character is, how dexterous they are, charismatic, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can get in the way of the more personal role-playing, character-playing aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so much of what actually happens in a game is derided on the skills of the characters, where the actual personality, the flaws, the desires, the avarice of different characters is what makes it more important. And when, you know, it can be difficult to try and get those in a nice balance.
So then, yeah, when you're rolling stats for your character, it determines a lot about what that character can become in the game.
Exactly.
And that's where a lot of faults sometimes lie, but also sometimes create an interesting dilemma with your character.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're rolling for stats for your character, do you like to have an idea of a character in mind before or after rolling the stats? Because I know that there's some people that like to make their character and then they roll after they've like written down all the lore about the character. And then sometimes it turns out they're not as strong as they wanted them to be or something like that.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I think I like that kind of, well, I like almost an improvisational style a little more, because mm-hmm. I like to see, oh yeah, I'm going to roll these dice, and dang, I have a lot of really low numbers. What am I going to do with this character? Because, like, on that same game idea that a lot of people really like the power fantasy kind of thing, where it's this macho, wonderful character that can do anything and be anything, where I think it's a lot more enjoyable and a lot more human to make sure that you have a character that, yeah, is really good at a lot of things. Good at, the physical attributes, or incredibly smart or incredibly cunning, but also they're really bad at something.
Like, yeah.
They have a deep set flaw that makes sense in the language of the game that makes it more fun to play with.
And do you think that makes it more, I don't know, do you feel like it's more real when there are those, you know, those contrasts, those big advantages in certain areas and then big disadvantages in others? Do you see that in people?
I mean,
as much as characters, or is it more of an overcharacterization?
Well, I think that aspect of, yeah, people are flawed. Of course that's something in reality. Like, nobody is going to not only be good at everything, but also, like, capable of everything. Like, it's a way to make sense of limitation and capability in, like, in-game form that, right now at least, in the more, like, current edition, I think is the, like, better iteration to try and get that across. Mm-hmm. I sure don't think that it always accurately depicts how people are. Like, you know, if somebody's trying to lift up something really heavy, it's not, oh no, your strength score is too low. No, like, you know, it's not black and white like that. But.
So, Mitchell, what are your understandings of chaos?
Well, I'd say chaos is more a thing where the person involved doesn't really care about exactly what happens so long as something happens. Like, they have an intent to have an action, an event, just out in the world. Where somebody lies on good or evil or neutrality, as far as D&D goes, that influences what they're most interested in seeing happen.
Okay, and then what do you think about evil? Like, what are your understandings on the concept of evil?
Evil, as far as I understand it, in the sort of tabletop role-playing perspective, is a lot closer to seeing selfishness. Personally, at least, where it's if good is the intent to benefit the majority or people other than yourself, evil is more the intent to benefit only yourself, or maybe more specifically, yourself at the expense of others.
In D&D, there's also character alignment charts that help you decide, you know, along with your stats, the way that your character would act in and out of battle, you know, when you're role-playing through the system. What's your experience been with alignment charts? And could you give just a little explanation of what it means?
Yeah, of course. Well, if you look online and see, like, alignment charts, you'll find a lot of memes trying to put either fictional people or real people in, like, oh, chaotic good or neutral evil, that sort of thing. And it's because in D&D, every character, every enemy, monster, every thing or person that you encounter has some kind of alignment. It's set up along a sort of 3x3 grid between good, neutrality, evil, lawfulness, and chaotic. And however somebody lines up on that scale depends on, or determines, how inclined they are to act a specific way. It's like a personality test put into game speak.
Okay, alright. So, as I mentioned earlier, there's a connection in old religions between chaos and evil. Do you see this as something that exists in D&D? Is there more of a draw to do evil if you're chaotic? Or do you think that's completely different and it's a different spectrum to look chaotically and evilly at something?
I think in the stereotypical idea of it, yes. Because, like, by that same kind of idea, chaos is just the idea of not really caring about anything that happens, mm-hmm. Just wanting anything to happen. But I think it becomes linked in that chaotic evil idea by the more traditional fantasy trope of the evil demon lord that wants to bring ruin to the world no matter who it's affecting. Yeah. When chaos and evil don't usually work that way when you put it to a specific person. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody who's chaotic evil, yeah, they could be that horrific tyrant that doesn't care and just wants to watch the world burn. Like, the Joker from Batman, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or they could just be some selfish gambler that doesn't want to do anything except keep gambling his life, his friends, his wealth, and everything, and making sure that something that benefits him happens out of it. Like, it's not black and white.
All right. So then, when looking more at lawful evil, what sort of things would that entail?
Well, I'll say outright that it doesn't have to mean I'm going to break the law of every government I'm participating in. It means more that a code of ethics, kind of, is depending on trying to cause suffering, or trying to ensure benefit only for yourself, or only in spite of others. So,
yeah.
Someone who might be lawful evil could be a politician that wants to work through the like political gamut only to benefit their party. Or some, like, just focused more on a personal code than necessarily laws of the land.
Okay, alright. That sounds good. And then, when flipping it over and talking about good, do you see that there's any evil in a character that could be categorized as lawful good?
Oh, definitely. I know, personally, in the campaign that I'm running right now with CSS Nerd Knight, we have two paladins playing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and
the trope.
Well, the trope,
for lawful
exactly.
good.
Because that's the thing you always hear about, the paladin that's screwing up the game because they never want to do anything that's outside of their oath, like what they devote themselves to working towards.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a god, could be an ideal, could be anything. And a lot of the time, I have my paladin, one of them, who is lawful good, only do what's ever good for himself or for the order of other paladins that he's working for. And that sometimes means that he outright lies to people when their lives could be on the line, or looking away from somebody who might have some different idea of how the world works just because they have a different perspective. And in the game, they could be considered lawful good, or in their minds they could be considered lawful good, when really they're being just as evil as the, like, main villain of your game.
Yeah. Yeah, so then, looking towards, like, a chaotic good character, I know in my experience I've had a chaotic good character that they often get referred to as kind of like Robin Hood,
mm-hmm.
where they're doing things and they know it's illegal, but it helps the greater cause. Now, in a ranking system, if we could impose that there is one,
mm-hmm.
would you say that chaotic good can be better than lawful good? Or do you think that they both have their faults?
I definitely think that both have their faults, just because... Well, going back to when I had mentioned personality tests, sort mm-hmm. of, it's the same way for alignments. Just because somebody might be chaotic good, or lawful good, or even lawful evil, doesn't necessarily mean that they will always act in the way that the systematic idea says that they will. Like, if... Say if you're on, like, the Jung personality or young personality type thing, an INFP will not always act like an INFP does.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're outright changing what kind of personality type or alignment type they have. It just means that they're human and acting to the context.
So, Mitchell, What are murder hobos?
Murder hobos are kind of a slang term used when talking about D&D. That refers to a party, the group of adventurers that are playing the game, mm-hmm. that might have an interest in the story that the person running the game is trying to weave, might like a lot of the characters, but at the end of the day, they're just a group of really murderers that don't really have any attachment to the places they're in or the people that they're around, and only kill everything that they want, everything that comes into contact with them in, like, combat encounters.
Yeah.
Without any real remorse.
Yeah, and a lot of dungeon masters, you know, just play off of this trope that, oh, there's someone in your way, you guys are in combat now, go kill them.
Exactly. Like, just because some person has, like, oh, dragon fire in their veins, or a magical, like, sword, or just any kind of weapon, the only thing they could ever do is kill something. Like, yeah. It would be... I would say, like, oh, it would be... If you had a gun, you'd be expected, oh, you have an issue with somebody? Just shoot them. No, that's not how it works. That's not how people actually act. Like,
so you can see that there's a little bit of a flaw in the way that this... I don't know, it's sort of become a trope now for parties that...
It has.
You know, there's no way out of conflict except to fight through it.
Well, exactly. Like...
Have you had any experience with any, like, diplomacy during combats? Or, you know, any ways to avoid confrontation?
Far more rarely than I wish would happen.
Yeah.
But I think I'm a pacifist, so maybe that's just me being angsty about it.
Yes.
But I think I don't see that happen very often just because D&D is so combat-focused. As you're progressing as a character, you learn the separate features, separate skills that usually make you better at killing things.
Yeah.
And it's a blurb somewhere in the book that says, hey, if you can find a way to describe it well enough, you could say that the damage you're doing is non-lethal, that it doesn't actually, like, or doesn't usually cause true physical harm, bodily harm, lethal harm, and your dungeon master could find a way to fit that in differently.
Okay.
Because people don't usually learn about that or aren't told about that, I think that people automatically want to say, yeah, I'm this hero, of course I'm going to kill somebody, when, you know, we wouldn't really look at it that easily.
Like, yeah.
It's not so simple to see violence as, you know, a good thing in real life.
So you're saying we're starting a campaign to stop lethality in D&D?
I mean, if we could, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know if D&D is quite the game that is built to have that happen very easily.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, it's that fantasy setting, usually there is... I hesitate to say a different set of morals in place than our real world.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a tough trope to break.
Yeah.
It does happen, but not very often.
And it tries to stay very real, but it is a fantasy in the end. And you know, you have to go with characterizations, even when looking at the alignment chart to... get the ideas of good and evil, and to have those always be a constant driver for the way your character acts.
Well, in most times, yeah. But I would say that trying to think of, like, the alignment of where you might land on good or evil, this might be a bit, not nihilistic, but it might be a bit strange to think. I sometimes think it's better to look at the alignment as a guide to your character instead of looking at it as the rigid, okay, I can only act like this and only act like this, because people don't really do that.
Yeah.
Like, except if there's some issue going on personally or emotionally with them. Like, people are gray.
Yeah. So then what's this real world relevance? And do you think that there's a relevance to the D&D alignment chart in the real world?
I definitely think there is, but in the same way that, to say it again, personality types or traits might be considered. Of course they have a weight. Of course they have a, like, interpretive value, because those are people making those characters. Those are people playing those characters. Something within them says, yeah, I want to be something here. I want to try and enact something here. And that, of course, means something. That has a weight in how people act.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you, Mitchell, for joining me today. That was really wonderful talking with you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's helped me understand the alignment chart and the way that D&D views evil and chaos in a much easier way. Dungeons & Dragons is successful in creating a game that engages its player base by allowing them to explore very deeply the motivations behind their characters. If you aren't already in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, I would highly suggest looking into one, because it is just so astonishing how fun it can be once you take control of a character that has a little bit of yourself in it. I would like to thank all of you for joining me today, and hopefully you've been able to look at the world of D&D in a new light, in a way that views chaos and evil in a philosophical perspective that challenges a religion from many centuries ago, and presents a solid argument. Are chaos and evil directly related, or is D&D right and they're on two separate spectrums? You can answer the question for yourself, but for now, I'm going to leave you with the outro. Thank you for tuning in.